So as we begin this morning, I want to share with you a few words about our final two rules of life. Over the last few weeks, we have been discussing Heartway's rule of life, which is basically the vows that we are committing to as a community. If we're going to be a part of Heartway Church, what does that entail in terms of our lifestyle? Because what unites us here as a church isn't necessarily a belief system. Many of us come from different backgrounds and we believe different things, even those of us who share a common affinity with Jesus. We see things differently, politically, theologically, so on and so forth. So if we're not united by a system of beliefs, what's ultimately uniting us here at Heartway Church is a particular way of life. We want to model our life after Jesus's way of living. And so our rule of life here that I was able to create, and you'll find this sheet in the seat back in front of you or on your seat. If you see these rules of life, this is kind of what Heartway is all about. This is our DNA. This is our culture. And today we're going to talk about the last two on this list, number 10 and number 11. I'm going to read them to you very quickly. Number 10 says this: caring for our bodies and taking time to enjoy the benefits of rest, reflection, and recreation in addition to work. And then number 11, placing our faith and our hope in God, who brings good out of evil, life out of death, and light out of darkness. So I want to begin by talking a little bit about number 10, caring for our bodies. I think that one of the most essential aspects of the spiritual journey is learning how to utilize and treat your body well. I don't know what it is, but for a lot of us who came up within a Christian worldview and a Christian framework, tend to devalue and de-emphasize the importance of the body. In fact, some Christians even go as far as saying that the body is holding them back, or the body has become some sort of a hindrance that's keeping them from fully experiencing God. And so we've created this dualistic split in the church between body and spirit. Sometimes we see the body as an enemy. We see the body as something that is holding us back from being everything it is that God has created us to be. And a big part of why this is the case is because of a huge misunderstanding when it comes to our reading of the New Testament. If you read through the New Testament scriptures, particularly the letters of Paul, Paul always makes a distinction between what he calls the flesh and the spirit. The issue is many of us, when we read the Bible and we read the word flesh, have assumed that Paul was talking about the body. And so the flesh is seen as something that is in opposition to the spirit. Okay, the spirit is more important than the body is. However, when Paul's talking about the flesh, what he's really speaking of is not like our physical body. He's talking about that sinful inclination within all of us, that selfish proclivity that exists within each and every one of us. He's talking about that tendency that we have to find our identity in anything and everything other than God. But he's not saying that we have to pit and put against each other body and spirit. In fact, if you are a Christian, the center of our faith is something we call the incarnation, which is the idea that God became flesh. God has taken on materiality. In fact, everything in this universe is God's very self-expression in physical and material form. This is why we say that Jesus is fully human and fully divine, both at the same time. It's a central affirmation of Christian theology. This is why Jesus referred to himself not only as the Son of God, but also as the Son of Man. And in the same way that Jesus shared those two identities at the same time and he held those two together as one, so it is true for you and for me. You and I are both children of heaven and children of earth, both at the same time. You and I are both fully human and fully divine, both. At the same time, you and I are matter and spirit put together as one. All of us are expressions of God in this world. So this is why the scriptures say that our bodies are temples. in the Old Testament times, whenever the Jewish people would talk about God's presence or God's power, they automatically would think about the temple. The temple is where God's presence dwelt. The temple is where you would go to meet God and offer sacrifices to God and lift up your prayers to God and worship God. Well, by the time you fast forward to Jesus' life, Jesus refers to his own body as a temple. And he said, destroy this temple, and in 3 days, God will raise it back up. What is he saying? That the very spirit and presence of God dwells in him. And then when you read Paul's letter, he stretches that metaphor even further so that it's not just God's presence in the four walls of a temple, and it's not just God's presence in the temple of Jesus' body. For Paul, your body and my body is also a temple for God. God dwells within us. And then when you go to the book of Revelation, the last book in the Bible, chapter 21 paints this beautiful picture of the entire earth becoming God's temple, which means what? All materiality is sacred. Everything physical is holy. This world, this universe is the hiding place of God. God lives in you and dwells in you. God is not just something out there. God is something in here that you can tap into, that you can access, that you are connected to and are a part of, which is why the scriptures say, honor God with your bodies. This is why it says in Romans chapter 12, present your bodies as a living sacrifice before God. The only kind of spirituality that is valid is a spirituality that is embodied, a spirituality that expresses itself physically and materially. Spirituality involves how you utilize and how you treat your own body. And so we have to remove all of this shame surrounding our bodies, especially those of us who grew up Christian. There's so much shame, especially when it comes to sexuality, because we all know we were given some very, very high standards. And when we don't meet those standards, we start feeling guilty and we start feeling ashamed and we start feeling really bad about our own bodies, which, by the way, I don't even think the problem is this, the restrictions that the Bible places on sexuality. I think the problem is just all of the shame and guilt and judgment that we've placed around them and that we've placed on ourselves. A lot of people don't realize you cannot disconnect and separate body from mind and from spirit. They're all interconnected. And your physical state is going to affect your mental state and your emotional state. They all are working in harmony. Quite frankly, a lot of you think that your problem is a spiritual one. Maybe it's a physical one. Maybe the reason why you're so irritated all the time is because you don't get enough sleep. Really. Maybe the reason why you don't have energy throughout your day is because you don't eat enough. Or maybe the reason why you are not the healthiest person in the world is because you eat too much. And you got to slow down a little bit. Or maybe others of you, you got to learn how to get more active because you're just lazy. And what's showing physically is also what's true about you internally. And so you've got to pump yourself up and get motivated and start doing things. But the bottom line is caring for your body also means listening to your body. What is your body telling you about the adjustments you need to make, the shifts that need to be made in order for you to be the healthiest version of you? And why is this so important? Because you are never more truly yourself, and you are never more connected to yourself and to God and to others than when you are in a rested and replenished state. That's what it is, very simply. You are always at your best when you are rested, when you are replenished, and when you are refreshed. Which brings me to a wonderful story in the New Testament about Jesus and his disciples. Scriptures say that one day Jesus was teaching the crowds, and after he was finished teaching, him and his disciples wanted to go from one part of town to another part of town. And so they get on a boat. And on their way from this one side of town to the other side of town, on this boat, this huge storm comes out of nowhere. And I mean, the winds are crashing and the water starts getting inside of the boat. All of the disciples, they start freaking out. They think they're going to die. And so they go running, looking for Jesus, who was also on the boat. And this guy's a miracle worker. So we're sure he'll be able to take care of the problem. And so they're expecting Jesus to also be antsy and, you know, trying to figure out what are we going to do and creating this huge problem. And you want to know what the scriptures say about what Jesus was doing in this moment when everybody was freaking out? He was sleeping. He was sleeping. Look at what the scriptures say. Jesus was sleeping at the back of the boat with his head on a cushion, if you needed that detail, okay? The disciples woke him up shouting, "Teacher, don't you care that we're going to drown? Jesus, don't you care at all?" That's what my wife tells me all the time. Don't you care? You don't care. Listen, one of the most important questions that you can ever ask yourself in the spiritual journey is, why do I care? Why do I care so much about what other people think? Why do I care so much about what other people do? Why do I care so much about what other people say? Why is this situation so frustrating to me? Why is this circumstance that I'm in so unbearable? If you were to honestly sit with that question as a form of self-reflection, don't ask that question and then say, because this person did that, or that person said this, or this other person did that. No. This is an exercise of self-reflection and self-examination. Why is this situation so unbearable? Why am I so frustrated? Why am I bothered? Why do I care so much? If you sit with those questions and you answer them honestly and thoroughly, you will almost be embarrassed by the answer every single time, because every single time you're usually making a bigger issue out of things than you should. Let me give you an example of this. Earlier this week, I had to have a very hard conversation with another human being. Typically, I've been the kind of person who has tried to avoid hard conversations. This is an area where God is growing me and stretching me. I did not want to have this hard conversation because I was making a lot of assumptions about this other human being, how they're going to react, what they're going to say. They're not going to like what it is that I have to say. I don't want to create problems. And so literally from the moment I decided I'm going to have this hard conversation to the time, well, like a couple of hours before I had that conversation, I was nervous. I was anxious. I was freaking out. Oh my gosh, how do I say this the right way so that this person, so, you know, because it's like, you know how it is with some people where you have to step on ice? Which, by the way, if you're that kind of a person, no one likes hanging out with you. Really, if everybody has to, no, it's the truth. Nobody likes hanging out with you, and you need to know this. So, you know, when you have to tiptoe with people and you can't say things to certain people because they're super sensitive, everything gets offended, this is the kind of person. I was so stressed. I was so anxious. Finally, it got to a point where I asked myself, and I woke up, because I'm at a place now in my journey and in my spiritual walk where I'm able to recognize anytime I'm in a state of anxiety or stress or tension, I'm out of alignment. And something's off about the way I'm seeing things, because God is always good and life is always good. It's just we who do not see it. And so I asked myself the question, why do I care so much? And after I went through this exercise of self-reflection, the answer that I came up with is, I was trying to control the situation. I wanted control. I wanted to control this person's perception of me. I wanted to control what their reaction would be. So I was making sure that I said exactly what I needed to say in the way that I needed to say it so that this problem would not arise and they wouldn't get mad at me. When I was willing to let that go, it was like this amazing peace and confidence that just flooded into my soul. Because I finally came to realize, you know what? What this other person thinks about me, how they perceive me, and how they react to what it is that I have to say is not my problem. It's their problem. How they treat me as a result of what I'm going to say is not my responsibility. It's their responsibility. My responsibility is to make sure that I approach this the right way, that I say what I need to say with kindness, with respect, but with truth. If I take care of my business, I don't have to worry about that other person's business. Let me read to you this passage of scripture here so you can get this more. This is my life verse. Look at this. Stay calm. Mind your own business. People, if you understood this, your life would absolutely change. Listen, stay calm and mind your own business. Here's something I've learned in life. There are only three kinds of business in life. My business, your business, and God's business. Whatever other people think or say or do is their business. Whatever's happening in my life or in the world that is beyond my ability to control is God's business. Whatever I say, whatever I think, whatever I do, that's my business. And let me tell you something. The only way I have learned how to remain happy and fulfilled in life is by sticking to my business. All of your stress in life comes from meddling in others' business. Why am I going to get worried and anxious about something that is out of my control? That's God's business. Why am I going to get stressed? And why am I going to freak out? And why am I going to let someone else's treatment of me, someone else's words towards me, get me to the point where now I feel bad about myself? No, no, no. That's their business. My business is how I'm going to respond in this situation. I have full control over that, which is full control over a lot more than you think. That's the only control you really need. Everything else, other people, God's business, people's business, is not for you to be concerned with. Some of you just care too much. You care way too much. And so I love what Jesus said to his disciples at some point. He said to them, when you go into towns, if people do not welcome you in their homes, if they do not accept you and embrace you, whenever you leave that town or that city, make sure you shake the dust off of your feet. That's what he told them. I'm sending you two by two into different towns to spread this good news of the kingdom, to care for the poor, to liberate the captives, to be God's loving presence for those who are oppressed. But if they don't welcome you and if they don't accept you, just shake the dust off. You got to learn how to shake the dust off sometimes with people. You got to learn how to brush things off. You got to learn kind of how not to care. And when I tell you don't care, I don't mean don't care in an arrogant way. I don't care what anybody thinks because I'm the best. I don't care what anybody thinks because I'm right. I don't care what they think. What do they know? Blah, 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 blah. If it's not coming from a place of love, it's not real. That's fake confidence. That's pride. That's arrogance. That's not going to lead you anywhere. Pride comes before the fall. When I say do not care, what I'm saying is don't care about trivial things because you care about things that matter most. You care about things like peace of mind. You care about things like tranquility. You care about things like your relationship with God. You care about things like relationship and connection. Once you have found those things, you have found everything. That's what life is all about. And why would you ever let anything ever get in the way of that kind of experience of life? Why would you ever, if it's in your ability to do something about it, why would you ever let anything interrupt your experience of God's peace and God's love and God's joy, which is always flowing out from God's spirit into your spirit every moment of every day? You see, nothing external to you can actually harm you. I'm going to say it again. Hey, bro.
Hey.
Hi. Wow, I thought you moved. All right, welcome. Nothing external to you can, no, it was a treat to see you. That's nice. Nothing external to you can harm you. If you choose not to be harmed, you won't be harmed. If you choose not to be offended, you won't be offended. St. Thomas Aquinas, one of the most prominent theologians in church history, he said that God has infused into every soul three virtues. Think about this language. God has infused into every soul three virtues, and those virtues are faith, hope, and love. What that means is you are never more truly yourself than when you are in a state of faith, hope, and love. When you are operating out of faith, hope, and love, you are living a life of harmony and connection with God, harmony and connection with yourself, and harmony and connection with all things and all people and all of creation. anytime you're not in a state of faith and hope and love, it's because you've created some sort of disconnection. You're out of alignment with your truest self. You're not in harmony with God in that particular moment. So what does it look like for us to live lives that are rooted in faith? Anytime we move out of faith and into fear, that's how we know we're going in the wrong direction. Anytime we move out of hope into pessimism, that's how we know we're creating issues that aren't there. Anytime we move out of love towards selfishness, that's how we know we're not seeing things clearly anymore. We're believing the lie. We're believing thoughts that aren't true, thoughts that are getting in the way of us seeing the reality of how things are. So faith is about learning how to trust. I trust and I know that my life is unfolding exactly how it needs to unfold in order for me to become exactly the kind of person that God has created me to be. I trust, which means I know that everything that's happening in my life is exactly what I need to be happening in my life so that I can grow, so that I can expand, so that I can become the fullness of who I am. It's trusting that your life is always working out in your favor, that grace is always present for you. No matter what your problem is, grace is always present. And you are given just enough grace to handle your problem, not anybody else's problems, by the way. So when you meddle in other people's business trying to tell them how to fix their problems, that's just you trying to be controlling. You get what I mean? So we learn how to trust that God is taking this somewhere, that there's a purpose, that there's a reason, that there's something that God is doing. God is always at work. And then we hope, which means we place our future into the hands of God, releasing worry, releasing anxiety, keeping our eyes fixed on Christ, keeping our minds on things above and not things beneath. Like Paul says, think about these things, things that are good, things that are beautiful, things that are trustworthy, things that are wise. Okay, so instead of believing every thought in our mind that's negative and that pins people in a bad way and that makes you feel like you're superior to others, all of that stuff is just a distraction from who you really are and what is really true about you at the core of your being. Jesus was somebody who lived in this state of faith and in this state of hope and in this state of love, which is why even though the storm was going crazy, he was able to be sleeping with his head on a cushion. How nice would it be if in the storms of our life, we were that calm and we were that cool and we were that collected? There really isn't a problem other than the problems that I choose to see. Years ago, when I used to be wild and ride roller coasters, I don't do that these days anymore, you know. But when I was in high school, for some reason, we went to a park in Orlando, and I don't know if there was a girl I was trying to impress or something, and so I wanted to go on the Hulk. Anybody been on the Hulk? It was a bad decision, you know. You shouldn't do that. So we're going on the Hulk, and I mean, that whole ride, let me tell you, I'm shaking, I'm holding onto the thing, and when we went off, because that thing like literally shoots you out, I thought I was gonna die. Like literally, what it felt like was that if I wouldn't hang on, I would have slipped out. That's has anybody ever felt that? No? Okay, I've literally felt like if I don't hang on, I'm gonna slip out or something's gonna happen. So I'm screaming, I'm yelling, I want it to be over, I regretted doing this, I don't like that girl anymore. Mind you, the person next to me, one of my friends who was right next to me, the whole ride, he had his hands up, woo, he was laughing, he was looking at me, he was just, and then when we got off, he wanted to do it again. I said, what is wrong with you people? You know, it's like we got some people at our church who are trying to get me to jump out of a plane. I was like, do you know who I am? And this guy right here in the front row, he's like, yeah, I've done like about 150 jumps off of the airplane and I'm working on my certification. And man, people are nuts. But anyways, you're more courageous than me. My point is, think about this roller coaster ride. It was the same ride. Me and my friend were riding the same ride, but we had two different approaches, which means we had two different experiences of that same ride. If you would have asked me, oh my, that's crazy. I almost died. The seat buckle was loose. What kind of a machine is this? Did they even check it? My other friend, this was so awesome. Oh my gosh, we got to do it again. Same roller coaster, two different approaches. How are you approaching the roller coaster of your life? You can either ride it afraid and worried and scared out of your mind, or you can just enjoy the ride. Once you're in, you're in. And people, you're in. You're in this thing. You're in this thing. And to make it a little more serious, yesterday we all probably saw on our phones about a gas explosion at a shopping center right here by our house. I was just there with my parents in the one of those stores and restaurants a couple weeks ago. Anything can happen in any moment. Life is crazy. There's ups and there's downs and there's twists and there's turns. However, there is a way for you to learn how to enjoy the ride. There is a way for you to learn how to experience all of those ups and downs as something that's beautiful. Because you know it's all taking you somewhere. You know it's all a part of the one human experience that all of us share together. Let me read to you this passage of scripture as we wrap up about Jesus on the boat with his disciples. It says, when Jesus woke up, he rebuked the wind and he said to the waves, silence, be still. Suddenly the wind stopped and there was a great calm. And then he asked them, why are you afraid? Do you still have no faith? Notice the connection that's made here between silence and faith, between stillness and fearlessness. It would be nice if you and I had like Jesus superpowers, and whatever's happening in our life, we can just say, be still, and everything stops. You know, or if like you're getting into an argument with somebody and you just say silence and everything's just quiet and everything listens to you, right? We wish we could silence, be still, do not be afraid. Why do you have so little faith? Be gone, you know, that would be nice. But listen, you may not be able to silence the storm around you, but you can always silence the storm within you. Do you understand that? You may not be able to do anything about anything out here, but you can always do everything about what's going on in here. And so it's learning about how to live in that space of stillness and learning to carry that with you throughout the whole day. You're detached from your thoughts. You don't react to everything. You're not an overreactive person. You're not easily irritable. You stay calm in certain situations. You keep your cool, which allows you to see things for what they really are. And when you live in that and you walk in that, you are living and walking in a way that allows you to transcend whatever it is that you may be facing in your life. You start walking on the water instead of drowning in it. The only problems that you have are the problems that you choose to see. If you don't see any problems, there won't be any problems. If you don't see any issues, there won't be any issues. And so I'm trying to, and what we are doing here is we're literally trying to rewire our mind. We're trying to develop what the scripture called the mind of Christ. Because your mind, when you do it your way, takes you to some really dark places. Is that not true? If we let our mind do what it does, that's why some people call it the monkey mind. Because your mind is just one thought after another, and they're random, and they're weird, and they're crazy. Most of the thoughts that you deal with, you don't even want to have them. But you feel stuck, and you're identified with those thought patterns, and so you think that that's actually you. And so when you hear the voice telling you, I'm not good enough, or you hear the voice saying, you should take your life, or you hear the voice saying, whatever it may be, you believe it. All of your suffering comes from believing thoughts that are not true. What's my indicator that I'm believing a thought that's not true? Is it producing stress? Is it producing anxiety? Is it producing fear? Is it producing self-righteousness? If it's not coming out of a place of faith, if it's not coming out of a place of hope, if it's not coming out of a place of love, then it's a lie. And you see it for what it is, and you let it go. The only problems you have are the problems you choose to see. I love how Father Gregory Boyle, he started something called Homeboy Industries. It's this wonderful center for rehabilitating ex-gang members in California. And I had the great honor when I went last year for seminary to visit his facility. Incredible, incredible dude, and what he's doing is phenomenal. He says this, God protects me from nothing, but sustains me in everything. And I know for a lot of us, we may not like the first half of that statement. But obviously we live in a world, and obviously God has created a world that involves things like randomness, chance, freedom, and as a result of that, pain and suffering and hardship. If God has made room for those things, we need to make room for them too. If God has allowed for these things, we have to allow them too. I was talking to a friend of mine who was talking about a teacher, a spiritual teacher that he was listening to. And this is super next level, but just so that you can understand the concept I'm trying to teach you today. She walks into the hospital room, and there's a woman there who is dealing, I don't know, with what kind of a disease or sickness. Maybe it's cancer or whatever it is. She was dealing with a very bad situation. And this woman walks into the hospital room, and she looks at her, and she says, "What's wrong? I don't see anything that's wrong." And the lady gets mad. She says, "You want to see what's wrong?" And she lifts up the sheet, and her leg, like her left leg or her right leg, was just deformed and weird and bad, and it was just looking funny. And she says, "Do you see this? Don't you see what I'm dealing with?" And the teacher said, "Oh, I see what the problem is. You think that your left leg should be just like your right leg. Why do you think that? You having the thought that this shouldn't be the way that it is what's causing you all of this pain and suffering right now." And somehow, at the end of that conversation, this woman who was laying there and who previously was mad and angry and totally disappointed with God and life started to laugh. She started to laugh because she realized that the source of her suffering was believing a thought that was not true. Is that making sense? You happen to think that it shouldn't be this way, but why are you thinking that? What makes you think that that should be the case? You don't have control over this. That's not your business. That's God's business. And so ultimately, what is our calling in life? To be able to do what Jesus did in the Garden of Gethsemane, when he was able to say, in the face of so much pain and suffering, "Father, nevertheless, not my will, but your will be done." When you can learn how to leave things there in the hands of God, everything that is out of your power, everything that is out of your control, that's when you begin to experience joy. That's when you begin to experience a whole new way of life. But it begins with your perception. It begins by the way you see. It begins by living a life rooted in faith and hope and in love. Let's pray. Father, thank you so much for the life that you've given to us. You are the God who brings good out of evil and life out of death and light out of darkness. God, your grace is sufficient for us. Sustain us in our trials and in our struggles and in our suffering. Teach us through everything it is that we're experiencing and facing in life. Show us how not to see problems, but instead see opportunities so that we can grow, so that we can become all it is that you've called us to be. When you become our highest priority, God, when knowing you becomes our highest priority, everything else that happens in life serves to bring us closer to that greater purpose. So today, God, we surrender. We surrender our will to your will. And we focus on the things that we can do something about, our business, our responsibility. May we relinquish our attempts to control other people and situations. And may we root ourselves in your goodness and your grace and your love. Amen. Amen. All right. Hey, let's put our hands together and just thank God for bringing us all together. Great day. Love you guys. Hope you have a great week. We'll see you next weekend.